try to give you a little bit of my take on where where the issues stand with respect to breeding, improvement of crops, and first page, this one, all right. Fortunately, the other speakers are going to talk about all these other challenges, have also done so. The fertilizer, the water, the issues of getting access to seed. It's not just having good seed, but access. These are not the thing I will have time to talk about in 20 minutes. And this has been gone over so many times, I don't have to spend any more time on it, except to say that I made this slide 8 years ago, and it's the same today. So where are we, and what's going on in spite of the big investment? Why is so much of Africa still having such low yields? So a lot of it does have to do, as you can see, with the input situations, with years of good rainfall versus bad. Where does seed come into this story, and where can it help? And I'll spend a fair amount of time on maize, but it's representative of a number of the crops, some of the problems. I think it's useful to ask, why do Africans love maize so much? It's not a native to Africa. Why is it so popular? And should it be grown as widely as it is? It certainly can yield good in many years. It's very widespread in southern Africa, eastern Africa, and increasingly now you see in countries like Nigeria and Burkina Faso, where the rainfall is good, they are really, really increasing the use of maize. And Africans love the flavor of maize. That hasn't been talked about much. And the women like it because, in contrast to something like sorghum, it cooks easily, relatively rapidly. That's also true now for the urban markets for rice, that Africans are much more now growing rice. The women like it very much, and they're growing urban markets. I think, and people don't talk about this very much, but if you've been to Africa, you know that birds are a serious problem for the open panicled crops like sorghum, millets, and rice. 30%, 40%, sometimes 100% losses if these flocks come through. It's a huge problem, and maize is unique in that regard in the cereals that the sheep that covers it protects it from the birds. I think it's fair to say that you can ask the question about whether maize should be in the priority for just the private sector. It is the crop of the private sector in Africa. There's an increasing use of hybrid maize. Where does the public sector breeding programs fit in? We'll talk a little bit about, try to get to that. And the issues with maize, it's very dependent on adequate rainfall and nutrients, and this tends to lead to booms and busts in the market. A good year, a lot of rain, you come through with subsidies, prices can collapse, and it's very one of those crops that's very vulnerable to erratic climate conditions. There are a lot of diseases that affect maize in Africa. And if I had time, I could tell you a little bit about the progress that's going on in each of these, but I don't. Just to mention, for example, maize streak virus, a Gemini virus, that's unique to the African continent, probably too bad, because the private sector is less interested in finding a solution for an African virus. But it's widespread. Cimet has resistant germplasm. There are molecular markers for introgressing it, but that sort of thing goes slow in Africa. You see a lot of it in the field. Stem borer could be controlled by BT, and it is. In South Africa, at least, BT maize exists, but nowhere else. I'll say something about GM crops at the end. I think people don't talk much. When I first came to the Rockefeller Foundation after having been an academic, I said, well, why can't you just take good Iowa pioneer hybrid maize and put it in Africa? And I was very naive about how different temperate and tropical varieties of maize are. And one of the things I would be very excited about now with genome-wide, the ability to do, here. I'm just irrigating my lecture. But the ability to have markers across the entire genome now, and particularly for maize, we're going to have wonderful resources. It would be really nice to know what are the key loci that are responsible for the differences between tropical and temperate maize. And then that might make for some really faster being able to take advantage of the of what we know from our good temperate maizes. And then the issue of OPVs, open pollinated varieties. This is discussed a lot. The crop scientists in the room have seen this picture, I'm sure. It's very dramatic how the change in the yields of maize in the United States came with the onset of hybrid maize. So you cannot say that this isn't a significant factor. And in Africa, I'm sorry to say, or maybe not sorry, it's a very complicated issue. In 20 minutes, you can't go into it. But open pollinated varieties are still the norm throughout many of the poorest places in Africa. And that may be appropriate where you have no seed systems whatsoever. It certainly is. It's not a simple issue. But one of the things I'm puzzled by still is that when you go to hybrids, you find most of them are still double cross, triple cross hybrids. And there has not been that push, I think. The reason is that the seed, you get a lot more seed from a double cross or a triple cross than you would from a single cross, unless you've selected for that, as the temperate maize breeders have done. And there's been very little attention to getting good seed yields from inbred lines for single cross hybrids. It's just something that I'm a little puzzled by. And the other thing that is very dramatic is that there has been a penetration of hybrid maize into the seed markets of Africa. This is from Simmet in 2008. You can see that in Kenya, in East Africa, in Southern Africa, Zimbabwe, Zambia, and South Africa is not on this, but it would be the same. The seed companies are basically, essentially producing almost all hybrid seed now for sale. This is a great thing if you believe in hybrid seed. What's really pretty kind of alarming when I looked at this data, wow, you can look at a country like Kenya with almost exclusively hybrid seed being promoted by the seed companies, and the farm yields are not that dramatic over the open country like Uganda, or where the penetration of hybrids is much less. And you have to ask yourself, why is this? And a lot of it has to do with soils, water, other issues. But you have to ask yourself, too, whether we have optimized hybrid production. Single cross hybrids, would they be making a difference? Probably when the inputs are low. The seed is good enough now that in well-managed trials with seed that's available, you can get 8 metric tons per hectare on some of these seeds. But if we're looking really to the future, then we really have to look at improving the performance of hybrids. And just looking at Kenya, this is pretty depressing. National production has barely kept pace with consumption of maize. And then you see that drop in 08. There's a drop in 09 as well. These are both political unrest and drought are responsible for some of these drops. And I thought I'd give you a little bit of update on, there are two large projects in Africa now, largely funded by the Gates Foundation and the Buffett Foundation, for developing drought-tolerant maize. They're very different approaches. The drought-tolerant maize for Africa, DTMA project, is very straightforward, classic approach. It builds on many, many years of CIMMYT working with the national programs in Africa to develop open-pollinated varieties that are drought-tolerant. And this is conventional breeding, and the project now is simply to take bulk up the seed and make it accessible to the farmers. And they expect to scale that up to 70,000 tons by 2016 for release in a number of countries. The other is a transgenic project. It's sort of under the radar for a lot of reasons. But it's using Monsanto BAS transgenes that are probably an approach that you're going to see these being released here in the United States. And Monsanto has, the companies have agreed not to put a premium on the transgenic aspect if this is successful. Right now, they're simply being, genes are being introgressed, and they're gearing up for, hopefully, for field trials in at least 5 countries with very serious phenotyping. Now, how much can we expect from that? A miracle from all of this breeding? Basically, the DTMA project, you're looking at 30%, 35% increases in yield compared to the Czechs in a drought year. Even with the transgenes, probably not much more than that. Not clear how much these traits are additive. Breeders look for breeding without molecular markers. There are certain traits like early maturity that are very important, easy to breed for. modified root architecture, there's some really great potential there for drought tolerance. That's where molecular markers will be hugely important. Altered stomata conducta, it's the same way. But just to make a point, drought tolerance as a trait is not going to create, it's definitely, like nitrogen use efficiency, these are two key traits definitely worth putting a lot of investment in. But yield is always proportional to biomass is always proportional to water transpired, and that's often just not thought about and not realized. I don't know, everybody knows it, but we don't think about it. And you just look at the, from Marianne Banzinger, this is what plots of males yield look like most of the time. They follow rainfall. And so that brings me to another crop I just spent a few minutes on, and that's sorghum. Sorghum is native to Africa. Ethiopia is thought to be the center of origin for sorghum. And it has a reputation for being much more drought tolerant, or somewhat more drought tolerant than maize. And is unlike here in the United States, where it's largely a hybrid crop and used in the animal feed industry, Africans eat sorghum. And it is, so I decided to look at Ethiopia. I went back with the FAOSTAT data and plotted the yields and see how the progress is going for maize versus sorghum. And what you see is the more erratic picture for maize is the weather. The sorghum is generally more resilient. You may not get these big shifts. And so it's an interesting alternative in times of erratic weather that I would just like to say a few issues that with sorghum, because we don't have a lot of hybrid sorghum yet, but I'll say more about that, there isn't as strong a seed sector as there is for maize. The open panicle makes it a target for birds, and that's a picture I took when I was in Tanzania recently at a field trial. They had women every 100 meters chasing the birds away, or they wouldn't have got any harvest whatsoever in this off-season trial. It's affected, like maize, by Striga, the parasitic weed. The digestibility is poor, and that's especially after cooking, and that's important for Africans who cook sorghum to eat it. And it's a very hard crop to compete with maize for human consumption. So I think looking at sorghum as an interesting crop, as a cash crop more, and now you see in terms of the progress, there are alternative markets that are emerging for sorghum. For example, in Kenya and Tanzania, the beer industry is now buying much more sorghum. And you may say that's not a good thing to promote, but when you're an African and you want a cash crop, it actually is a very interesting market for sorghum. And the animal feed industry is certainly going to grow. And new hybrids are starting to emerge now. Mary Magonja is an Ikrasat breeder. She has some absolutely spectacular hybrid sorghum in the field. Now in that trial where the woman was chasing the birds, she's using one of her inbred lines is from India, and she's getting really great heterosis. In Mali also is another example where some new hybrid sorghums are being released. So there's a lot of progress there. And this is a farmer that came and said, I think this is, you don't always have to He was a very, very happy man, I can tell you. And this is an area where 3 out of 5 years the maize crop fails because of rain. It's one of those areas, as there are many areas of lowland Kenya, where you ask yourself whether they should even be promoting maize. You don't always have to grow what you eat. You can buy what you want to eat. Pigeon pea is another crop that's extremely interesting. Ecrisat has been doing some really wonderful breeding with pigeon pea in East Africa. It's not a native to Africa, but Africans are learning to like to eat it themselves. It's a great export crop to India in the off-season. The Indians use it for dal. And in Kenya and northern Tanzania, in the very dry areas, it's become a really interesting crop. And once again, from a kilogram of pigeon pea, you can buy 3 kilograms of maize. So another interesting one. And so I think seasonal weather, if we really were better at predicting seasonal weather patterns, this would be a huge thing for farmers. And I think breeders need to really offer farmers flexibility in crops. If farmers really knew what was coming, they could make decisions. Open poly, use my own seed, buy hybrid seed. How much fertilizer to use? How much sorghum versus maize should I grow? These things would be enormously helpful to farmers. The last crop I'll talk about a little bit is cassava. It's a hunger crop in Africa. When all else fails, it's the hunger crop of the poor. And it's fairly drought tolerant, fairly resilient with not a lot of fertilizer. It has huge problems. Viruses, there's a pandemic of cassava mosaic virus all over sub-Saharan Africa. An emerging threat of brown streak virus in East Africa. And this rather fragile distribution systems for virus-free cuttings. Something people don't know, maybe I didn't know when I first started working in these areas, there are no inbred lines of cassava. It's highly heterozygous. I mean, it's a real crapshoot to breed cassava. So there is some work now trying to get doubled haploids. That would be really great. One of the things, this is taken from successes in African agriculture, and this is, if you look at that rise in Ghana and Nigeria in cassava production, it correlates with the release of CMV, cassava mosaic virus resistant cassava, a real success. But as in with everything in Africa, 2 steps forward, 1 back, there's now a new threat that's affecting also cotton leaf curl in Pakistan. There are these DNA satellites that have been detected in cases where resistance looks like it's beginning to break down. And these may be suppressors of silencing, but it's a real threat that needs to be looked at seriously. Finally, last two things very quickly. Give you a little update on the status of GM crops in Africa. South Africa is still really the only serious player with GM crops. Since 1998, they have been involved with the release of GM crops. BT cotton led the way. Now there's also herbicide tolerance, BT maize, and so on. Burkina Faso is an interesting story. Monsanto went together with the national program, introgressed Bolgard 2 into their cotton, and it got approved. After the first year of release, the use has gone up 14-fold. And because they didn't use a lot of pesticide before, you see both yield increases and now reduction in pesticides. Egypt's a very minor player. The good news, what I want to say, I think there's a tipping point maybe in Africa now on GM crops. It has been terrible to get field trials approved, and that's, you cannot develop GM crops for Africa if you can't test them in the field in Africa. And now you see a great biotech program in Uganda for their bananas. A lot of young PhD scientists there collaborating with people around the world. Kenya and Uganda are involved in trials. Drought-tolerant maize will, I think, help open the way in a number of countries. In Nigeria now, BT cowpea is in a trial, as are vitamin A-enriched cassava. So finally, also, I think we tend to talk about Africa like it's a country, it's a continent, but if you're going to have these crops succeed, they're going to have to deal with national boundary issues and seed movement and seed certification and so on, and regional harmonization of the biosafety laws. And at long last, I think there's some serious talk about regional harmonization, at least in the COMESA countries. The last point for the breeders is that I think everybody in this room that's involved in plant breeding knows that there's a revolution going on because of rapid DNA sequencing and the ability to develop huge amounts of SNPs across the entire genome that you can now, if you have good phenotyping, you can correlate SNPs across the genome with traits and eventually maybe ease the burden on the phenotyping and rely more on molecular markers. How's this going to play out in a place like Africa? Huge challenge, and I think what it really is, we're going to have to think of ways to have centralized SNP platforms, who will do what, and where the breeders in Africa can really make a difference is phenotyping is still limiting the development of this much more than the markers. DNA sequencing is cheap now. So in conclusion, I think we have to ask ourselves, are these minimal productivity gains just, is it going to be just more of the same? Or with vastly improved funding and focus, are we really on the verge? And I think we are seeing a doubling of yields. We are getting, and the seed will lag behind fertilizer and water, but if they can solve these problems, then seed will become even more important, I think. And the promise of hybrids, I really think, has not been fulfilled, but you hope it will be, and I think having a viable seed sector is absolutely critical. Weather forecasting, as I said, and for those of you in the room, I think we can ask whether basic science can solve some of the issues like the pandemics of these cassava viruses, whether it really can deliver useful GM crops, and can we bring the power of genomics to bear on plant breeding. So, thank you.